The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show Q&A version, where we answer your questions. Today we've got, a live caller question that's going to come in momentarily once we get them hooked up on the line here. And then we're going to get into some email questions as well. We have a nice pile of email questions you listeners have kindly given to us or sent to us over time over the past few weeks, and we'll do our best to get through some more of those. So my name is Chris Stein. I'm here with Jim Salnier as well, and we'll wait for our live caller to come through here. Looks like if my mechanism's right. Good afternoon. Thanks for calling the Retirement and IRA Show. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Perfect. Yeah, nice and clear. So welcome to the show. My name's Chris. We're going to refer to you as we always keep everyone's identity anonymous, so we're going to call you Georgette because Jim's used to that, so he won't mess up your name as long as we keep it simple.
You tell me your real name, I'm going to end up spouting it out.
Yeah, so we don't tell anybody your real name.
Although with me, I always get names wrong, so.
Well, true. You might be the safest one to share it with.
True.
So I hear you've got a question about Roths and bucketing strategy or something related to that.
Actually, I just want to get my compliment in about your show. I really enjoy all of the content. I've gone back and listened to almost all of your episodes on iTunes.
Wow.
Not necessarily in order, but I kind of go through them by topic, and I must say no matter which one I listen to, I always find something interesting and learn something from it.
So
the repetition helps.
If we quiz you on it, you will pass?
I think I'd be doing pretty good on things.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Would you happen to be from the fine state of Kentucky before we begin?
No, I know you want to retire there, Jim, and I can't give you any feedback. I want to go there sometime, just passing through. But no, I'm from Pennsylvania.
Oh, that's not far.
No.
Not too far.
Yeah, you're like neighbors.
Is it raining there today?
It is. Yeah. It is. We have just started to get rain from the storm Florence.
You're just always dying to point that out, aren't you, Chris?
Well, there's a tropical depression now that's traveling over the state. So, it's not always like that. I will admit there's not always that type of storm activity. So that's not the reason why I'm cautioning Jim about moving to that area of the country. He's not used to that level of humidity.
Not anymore. I grew up north of
there.
Yeah,
but you're way, way, way... past
that. Anyways, Georgette, why don't you continue with the question? Sooner or later, a Kentuckian will call and put to rest if I should move there or not.
Yeah, I'm sorry, it's not me.
No, that's okay. That's okay. There's got to be someone in Kentucky who listens to this show.
Maybe Pennsylvania's nice.
I suppose, but I'm not a Pittsburgh fan.
I hear Kentucky's more humid, though, so I wouldn't go for that. We have plenty of humidity here.
It's even more humid than Pennsylvania?
Well, I've never been there, but that's what I hear. So, I don't know.
Yeah, but it's going to be hard for me to root for the Steelers or for the Eagles after what the Eagles did to my Patriots last year.
Did you watch football yesterday?
I didn't even want to talk about what my Patriots did yesterday.
Yeah, how'd that go yesterday?
It did not go well, okay? It was a little rough.
It was the heat, probably.
It was. And they had this big, big graphic on the screen, how many games Tom Brady loses when the temperature is above a 90. Let's just put it this way. In his whole career, he only won one game when the temperature was above 90.
We found his kryptonite.
Oh, his kryptonite is heat. My God.
Well, anyway, back to Georgette now that we've wasted all this time.
the Eagles lost, too, just for the record.
The Eagles lost, too?
Well, don't sound
they
so
did.
Happy.
Of course I'm happy.
Oh.
After what they did to us?
You can't be that bitter for this
I
long.
Am bitter.
Oh, my gosh.
Rob and Tom of his sixth Super Bowl ring. Mm-hmm. All right. Go ahead, Georgette. What do we got for you?
Okay, well, I thought what I would do is just give you, like, our financial profile, and then I have some what you'll probably find to be pretty simple questions, two or three questions on the bucketing strategy that I'm a little confused on. And then I wanted to talk about how to best proceed with Roth conversions based on our financial profile.
Okay.
So my husband and I are both retired. I'm 59, he's 60, and we're pretty much at the age where I guess we're in our retirement tax planning window, as you call it.
I do call it that.
Yeah. So
instead of Jim's tax planning void.
Hold on, George.
You want to call it.
Chris is trying to throw me under the bus. Junior, before he left, called it the tax void. I called it the tax hole.
I like the window.
We all like the window.
No, when you see the way we draw it out for people who do our plan, it looks like a hole right in the middle of your tax graph. Because we create a graph and we show, and you see this hole. And then the whole reason we couldn't use it is Junior used to giggle like a 12-year-old when I said tax hole. And that's why we
much like Georgette is now.
So, well, what it was
planning window
was he was working on a couple's case, and I went in and I said, "Do they have a nice looking tax hole?" And he just started laughing like a 12-year-old, and ever since then he wouldn't stop. So,
yeah.
Anyways, go ahead, Georgette. Chris had to throw me under the bus with tax hole.
Okay, so we have $1.2 million in a traditional IRA. $500,000 in a 401k, $500,000 in a 403b, and only about $160k in Roths. So I would like to beef that up if I can. We also have $500,000. I'm using rough numbers. $500,000 in an investment account, a brokerage account, and then a separate $70,000 in stocks. And then the new factor for us is that we have $900,000 in cash that I want to use to fund our bucketing strategy. It's currently just in a high-yield savings account.
Now, when you say you have $900,000 in cash, is that part of any of this other money, or is all the other money's invested and you have $900,000 sitting around in a bank somewhere?
It's separate. We came across it relatively recently. That's why it's kind of just out there in limbo right now. Okay. Otherwise, I would never leave that much money just in cash, I don't think.
Depends on your outlook the next couple of years.
Okay, yeah. So when you say $900,000 in cash, is it in like a joint account in both your names? Is it in one of your names? It's not in any type of retirement account wrapper.
Correct. Okay. It is in both of our names. I had to put them on it.
No problem.
No, kidding.
Yeah. And the $500,000 in investments, that too, is that not in any type of retirement account wrapper? For lack of a better term, it's just like a brokerage account you have somewhere with investments in it.
That's correct. And okay. all of our retirement accounts and brokerage accounts are all in mutual funds and bonds.
Okay.
Okay.
Pretty simple. Nothing
I'm glad
else
you have a nice big old tax planning window.
Yeah. I think I'm going to need it, right? Yeah.
I was going to say, yeah, there's definitely going to be some opportunity here.
So of the $900,000, should I explain how I planned on structuring the bucket strategy?
Sure.
Okay. So I understand what the buckets are. We're going to take, our for sake of this discussion, in round numbers, our annual expenses are about $100,000. So I believe bucket one would just contain $100,000 of cash and just stay in a high yield savings account. Bucket two, I would have for years 2 through 6, and that would be another $400,000. I can explain why that's not $500,000, but that would be $400,000, and I'm assuming with interest rates the way they are, that would be either in a CD ladder or an annuity.
Okay.
And then the third bucket for investments is everything I just explained above. Again, in mutual funds and bonds. And then for fixed income in bucket four, we don't have any right now. At 65, we would have approximately $60,000 a year from our pensions. And then at 70, with Social Security and the pensions together, we would be at
$135,000. Okay.
So keeping in mind that I want to do work to do Roth conversions, and we get to that, I guess my questions about how the bucket strategy works are about bucket one and bucket two.
Okay.
So with bucket one, I thought I heard in one of your shows that there is a way to kind of fund that on an ongoing basis in case you need to use that money when the market's down.
Yeah, I'm just listening to you talk, and I'm writing notes, so you can keep talking,
okay.
And then we'll walk through it. Yep.
Okay, my assumption of how the strategy works is you should, generally speaking, use money from your IRA while the market is up. And if the market takes a dive, then you would go to your year one for whatever number of years buckets to live off of that until the stocks recover, stocks and bonds recover.
Okay, that could be a way, yes, mm-hmm. to look at funding your spending. There's two options when it comes to spending your assets, and these are our opinion as our firm. You talk to other financial advisors, and I know, Chris, you teach financial planning at CSU, Colorado State University. There's really no recognized way on spending assets. You're going to find advisors with their own thoughts. Mm-hmm. So when we describe our bucketing strategy to you, Georgette, we're describing our opinion. There could be other advisors listening to this who'll disagree with us. Is that a fair assessment, Chris?
Yes. And the one thing when you're talking about assets of these quantities, the first question we'd probably also clarify are some of these assets maybe off the table or meant in some kind of legacy for charitable giving after you're gone, or are there children or others that you want to make sure have a certain amount, because that's obviously a very different story than, oh, this only needs to fund the two of us, and that's it. After that, we really don't care so much. So we kind of need to clarify that as well to really understand the numbers we have, and that will also drive this question that Jim was alluding to about which accounts should I dig into first, because there are certainly certain accounts that benefit at death and for charitable giving much better, you know, they fare much better in a tax planning situation than other accounts, and that will drive that too. So is there any plans for any of that sort of thing after you pass away?
Well, we haven't settled into anything along the charity lines at this point, I think, of planning. There are two children, and we would like to leave something to them, although we haven't really, you know, settled in on an amount. I think they'd be mm-hmm. happy with anything.
Right.
It's not really a number that we've settled in on. I think there'll be enough to go around, if you know what I mean.
Sure. How old are the kids?
In their one's 27 and 29.
And both, neither are special needs or disabilities of any kind?
That's correct.
Okay. So, okay. Yeah, so that adds a little extra mm-hmm. variable into this.
Uh-huh.
Couple of things that I want to make mention of, and for listeners who don't know what Georgette is talking about with bucketing is actually, I call it visualized asset allocation. And what it is essentially designed to do is make you feel comfortable spending your money. So if you would allow me, Georgette, just to explain to our listeners a little bit about why people would want to consider bucketing. It will help with people who don't, or like you, listen to all our past shows. It could be someone recently listening to this saying, what the heck are these guys talking about with bucketing? The whole idea of bucketing, the whole idea of retirement planning itself, I often tell potential clients and existing clients, is retirement planning is just a negotiation. And we as a retirement planning firm, we act as arbitrators. That's all you're hiring us to do. Well, you're hiring us to do a lot more than that. Not that you're hiring us, Georgette, but when people hire us, they hire us, yes, to crunch numbers, to project taxes, to look at things. But ultimately, we are working as an arbitrator doing a negotiation between the younger you and the older you. And the younger you, when you stop working, not everyone is going to have your level of assets, Georgette, and relatively low spending to those levels of assets. So a lot of times when people first retire, they get very, very nervous. I call it spending paralysis. They don't want to spend their money early in retirement out of this fear they may need it later in retirement. So that's why we came up with our secure retirement income process that would help put in place protections for what we call the minimum dignity floor, which are those expenses covered by bucket four. So listeners, as Georgette described her buckets, she got to bucket four. She called it fixed income, but then she quickly added, so it tells me that she knows what we're talking about here, at least in our opinion, Chris. Mm-hmm. Other advisors will differ on this. But she quickly said she'll be making about $135,000 a year in bucket four money when she reaches age 70, comprised of pension and Social Security payments. So we consider bucket four to be lifetime secure income that will continue as long as Georgette and her husband, will call him George, as long as George and Georgette are around, this income comes. And it is designed to take care of the older you, the 70, 80, 90-year-old you, who will not understand finance. Georgette is 59 years old. She's at her peak of understanding financial concepts, according to Harvard University. That peaks in the human brain at about age 53. So Georgette is still at her peak. She clearly knows what she's talking about. In 20 years, in 30 years, she will not be on her peak. When she's 89 years old, she won't understand it like she does today. So what she's trying to do with bucket four is put in enough guaranteed lifetime income, folks, to take care of those expenses that we call your minimum dignity floor. We won't get into all of that. We're going to concentrate on buckets one, two, and three today. So Georgette's next question is how to position bucket one, two, and three essentially for all the other spending. And that spending would be the fun things. That's why I said we are arbitrators and this is a negotiation. It's a negotiation between the 59 and 60-year-old George and Georgette and the 89 and 90-year-old George and Georgette who may or may not be here. And the younger George and Georgette are going to want to spend money while they have the health, inclination, and abilities to do so. So they want to position their money to spend. But one of the problems, folks, with spending from a portfolio, if you put no protections in place, remember, folks, Georgette said she is allocated in mutual funds. And did you say fixed?
And bonds.
And bonds.
Mm-hmm.
So she has funds and some bonds, some individual bonds, Georgette, or bond funds?
They are bond funds.
Okay. So she's utilizing professional management, whether they're going to be indexed and passive and low cost, or if she's using more active management with a little higher cost. We don't need to get into that, Georgette. But folks, she has her money in mutual funds. So she exposes herself to a little bit of problems when you're using individual funds. And Chris and I don't look at this as a negative because we like individual funds. We're not advocating people run out, Chris, and buy and design their own portfolio. The lot can be said for the professional management of individual funds. You agree?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. That's okay. For most what I call retail investors, it's hard to beat the ease, efficiency, and options that you have in all the different types of mutual funds that are available. Correct. You can pretty much design any kind of overall investment strategy utilizing these funds.
But once
you become a hobbyist or you get really into it and you want to start picking individual investments, certainly can be done, but it for a lot of people can get out of control pretty quickly, and they don't quite.
And it becomes a full-time job.
And right, if that's what you're looking for, great. But otherwise, it's probably advisable for most people to start.
So when it comes to spending, folks, from her assets, she's going to own funds, and those funds are going to own a series of investments within them: cash, stocks, and bonds. Most people listening to this are do-it-yourselfers and understand that. But there is a big weakness when you start spending money, folks. Even though George and Georgette are going to cover their minimum dignity floor items for the older them, it's not fully up and running until age 70. They're only 59 and 60. So there's another 10 or so years where a lot of their expenses are going to be not only for the minimum dignity floor items they need to cover, that's required expenses. We generally say it's food, utilities, transportation, housing, and health care. That makes up our vision of a typical minimum dignity floor. They're also going to want to cover a lot of fun spending. But when you're spending from assets on fun things, you expose yourself to a couple of risks, least of which is known as sequential risk. And that, folks, without getting too deep into it, is just the timing of losses in retirement can really influence how long George and Georgette's money lasts. If they are forced to sell some of their investments when the market is down, they're going to have to sell more shares than they would have had to sold when the markets are up. And that's called reverse dollar cost averaging. When George and Georgette were saving their money, and they've done wonderful at saving their money, a down market is a sale for them. It's a buying opportunity. Wall Street has that euphemism for people in the accumulation phase. This is a buying opportunity, they'll tell you. The markets are down. And Chris, when you're adding to your cash flow, when you're adding to your savings, that is true.
That is true, and that's a good opportunity.
But the opposite happens when the market is down. George and Georgette are going to be retiring, folks, or already are retired. They need to, let's just pretend they don't have $900,000, almost $1 million sitting around in cash. Let's say it was all invested. And if their portfolio was down, they can't cherry pick their investments within the mutual funds. The funds are going to own a series of stocks, bonds, cash, and some of those are up, some of those are down. They can't call the mutual fund company and say, hey, can you just sell all those stocks I own inside your portfolio that are up and I'm not losing my money on, and hold all the ones that are down so I don't have to sell them? What happens is when you're using mutual funds and ETFs, if the general portfolio is dragging you down, there could be individual investments within those portfolios that are up. But if all the general investments are pulling the entire portfolio down, you're going to be forced, Chris, to sell the entire fund that's down, even though individual holdings may be up.
You just have a little bit less flexibility.
You have less flexibility
in choosing what you sell. Some of that could be mitigated, just to play a bit of devil's advocate, by having lots of different types of mutual funds and lots of different areas of investing, which might then provide you with years when, you know, these group of mutual funds are up, these are down.
And that's
what
bucketing
is. You don't necessarily have to hold mutual funds that have everything in them. You can have different.
And that's what we describe when I say bucketing is visualized asset allocation. So what Georgette is going to do with her husband, and what she's trying to do, is position how much money should be in bucket one and how to position it. We call that your cash pool, and cash just sits there. And most mutual funds, folks, if you look at their investment breakdown, do have, or if they, as long as they're not passive funds and index funds, if they're active funds, they are going to have a cash pool in them where the manager is building cash if he or she feels there's nothing worth buying. So how you can overcome sequential risk but also feel comfortable spending your money early in retirement is to not fall victim to sequential risk. So you simply put, we recommend 2 years of money in cash in a cash pool. And Georgette, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about your cash pool in a second. So she's going to put a little bit of money in her cash pool. Chris and I recommend about 2 years of expenses that they're going to need to cover. So for the first 2 years of retirement, bucket two, Wade Fowle recently termed it a buffer asset, and Professor Fowle, highly regarded here on the Retirement and IRA Show, is a professor in retirement income and retirement planning at the American College, and we greatly respect him. He termed it recently a buffer asset, and I love that for Bucket 2, because that's exactly what it's designed to do, act like a buffer between the cash pool and your investment pool. Because then you're also going to have investments. And the bucket three is your investment pool. And you know this, Georgette, but for listeners who don't. So this bucket three asset, in our opinion, once you have your cash in bucket one and you have your buffer asset in bucket two, and for us, a buffer asset, I prefer personally 100% principal protected buffer assets, but some people don't mind holding ultra short term or short duration bonds in there. Not fully principal protected, but the downside, Chris, loss on an ultra short bond is rather minimal.
High quality. Short term and high quality.
High quality. So it's a type of asset bucket two that's more of a buffer that sits between pure cash and an outrageous investment. And now what Georgette was asking about is on her investment pool as it grows, should she kind of skip bucket one and spending cash from that and in a good year spend some of her gain? And I would say I have no problem with that. Just because we design a bucketing process to, Chris, to have 2 years cash in bucket one, we say all the time the actual spending does not necessarily begin in bucket one, then move to bucket two, right, then move to bucket three.
It's not meant to be kind of this hardline sequential accessing of this money. It's what this does is creates kind of diversification in your assets, what's available to you, granting you what in the finance world we call option value. You have benefits or value in the fact that you have options to tap the cash account or tap the buffer accounts or tap the investment accounts each year depending on what's most advantageous, not forgetting tax implications.
That's where I was going with this.
Because so, that's a big one here.
Yeah. Right. And Georgette, when you asked, should you take from your stocks, one thing I want to point out to you, Georgette, is all account types you have. Remember, we break them down into three types, folks. If you listen to our prior podcasts like Georgette, you know we break your accounts down into always taxable, maybe taxable, and never taxable. Always taxable accounts is going to be on Georgette, the $1.2 million she has in her IRA, the $500,000 in a 401k, the $500,000 in a 403b. Those are always taxable. When Georgette takes money out of those accounts, she will always pay taxes. Then she has some maybe taxable accounts. We call them maybe, folks, because she may pay taxes. She may not pay taxes. That would be her investment account and her cash account. Now, her cash account could also be technically, Chris, a never taxable because the $900,000 is basis. And if she got a return of that basis, it's never taxable. It's only the gain. But I would still put that in a maybe taxable account. It may or may not be taxable, and if it is taxable, it's likely going to be taxable to her as a capital gain, which gets preferential treatment. Then you have never taxable accounts. And for George and Georgette, they have precious little there. They recognize they have tax diversification, and you do, Georgette. You have almost equal amounts, not quite equal amounts, but almost equal amounts between always taxable and maybe taxable. The problem is you're never taxable. Your never taxable is about $160,000 in a Roth, but those are distribution folks in retirement. Money coming from that account are never subject to taxes. What I recommend, Georgette, as someone puts a bucketing strategy together, and in your case, because there's so little in the Roth, I would leave the Roth as a pure bucket three long-term growth aspect, especially because you and your husband are just about turning 60, and this is money that might not be spent until you're in your 80s. So I would right now position the $160,000 in your Roth as pure bucket three, 100% investing, and it should represent the most aggressive part of your portfolio. And we could get into that in a second. But you should, in your always taxable and maybe taxable accounts, have both buckets. That's what I was trying to get to, Chris. And what's the advantage? Chris just hit the head on the nail. The nail on the head. Did I say it right? Whatever. Chris just got it right. Taxes. Taxes are what's going to decide if George or Georgette should take money out of an always taxable or a maybe taxable account at any given time during the year. So we have to look as they need spending. We can kind of guess in January how much they might be able to take out in total, but we haven't gone into health care. I don't know if you guys are trying to qualify for the ACA tax credits. And if you are, we're going to take precious little out of your IRA and 403B and 401K always taxable accounts. And it's going to greatly limit your tax planning window also if you're trying to get ACA tax credits. So when we design a bucketing plan for people who have narrow but broad diversification in spending, what do I mean by that? Very narrow in tax-free accounts, very good always and maybe taxable. It's almost 50-50. So when I see two of the three being 50-50, I would want a bucket one and a bucket two in both style accounts, Georgette. That's what I would want, because we have to time your spending. But in any given year, that bucket three, which is your investment pool, if it is up and it has a gain, pay attention, folks. Georgette and her husband are retired. They've got to spend the gain, Chris. It's no longer about reinvesting and let it ride, reinvesting and let it ride. They actually have to consume. They actually have to start spending some of their portfolio. Well, if your portfolio is up 10, 15, 20, 30% in a year, or maybe not the whole portfolio, but individual investments within their bucket three, Chris, are up that much, I would be fine with spending some of their bucket three. Now, should it be bucket three from their always taxable account or bucket three assets in their maybe taxable accounts? That goes back to what you said, Chris.
Or a blend, right, or a blend of those things. I'd say what this whole scenario is really begging for is a kind of multi-year tax strategy. And I think that might be where you're thinking, because you're trying to figure out how to position these things and maybe doing Roth conversions, which you mentioned the tax planning window, and that's really where that strategy shines, is trying to figure out over the next 10, 11 years, assuming you're not going to go back to work, how can I take best advantage of the current tax situation and maybe bolster that tax never taxable account, which is a little bit small compared to the rest of your accounts, and do it during a time when you can do it at relatively low tax rates.
I would recommend, Georgette, you get a advanced tax projection done. And I'm not throwing that out there to hire us. You need not just an analysis. You got to understand, when you're doing tax planning, now I'm kind of bopping over between bucketing and tax planning, but when you're doing tax planning, I often tell our clients and people who counsel with us on a coffee and a second opinion that we can do a annual tax projection every year and kind of guess how much should or should not be converted in any given year. But I cannot right now tell anyone, well, you should definitely convert X amount in 2018, X amount in 2019, X amount in 2020, 2021, 2022. You have to look in any given year how much to convert, but you can do a tax projection analysis right now that would show the baseline, we call it. What if you and your husband had these accounts, which you do because you told him you had them? What if we allowed them to grow and did nothing proactive? That's what we're looking for. We're forming a baseline here. You did nothing proactive. So, Chris, you did what most people do. You continue to defer her near $2.2 million in always taxable accounts.
Right.
And if you're working with a CPA, that's probably what they're going to have you do because CPAs are so wired to reduce your taxes today, and they're not looking into the future. So you would create a baseline, Georgette, because you have a lot of other moving parts here. You got $2.2 million in an IRA that's going to stop being subject to RMDs in 10 years. Assuming, even if, and I don't think the market will return 7% over the next 10 years, I think we're going to have a major correction shortly that'll cause a prolonged period of underperformance. But if you did get a 7% return, you're now going to be looking at $4.5 million by time RMDs begin. And you are going to be nailed with RMDs that are probably going to push you into IRMA tax brackets, income-related monthly adjusted amount, Medicare surcharges, in other words. You are also going to be subject most likely to a widow-widower tax penalty, and it's going to push an outrageous amount of your Social Security into taxes. There's a lot of moving parts here. So you do an advanced tax projection first, and it will show you every single year from now to mortality, assuming you spent as most people do, which would be from your never taxable and maybe taxable accounts first, or most people, Chris, with almost $1 million in maybe taxable will spend that for as long as possible and let the IRAs grow. So you kind of run a projection to show what it would look like if you did nothing, and then you start playing, and here's where the magic comes in. Then we start building in future conversions, maybe convert to fill up certain bracket levels and things of that nature. We show maybe spending from IRA assets. When it comes time, you asked earlier, should I spend from assets that are up or spend from cash? It's the same thing. So it doesn't matter to me if you spend from assets that are up from bucket three or from cash in bucket one. You spend from cash in bucket one where you would have to spend in bucket three if it was down. We don't want to do that. So you can go straight to bucket one where the cash is. But what I'm trying to get you to understand is once you have your tax baseline, you can start building in a lot of scenarios and looking to see. We have a client we're working on right now. If they do nothing, Chris, you haven't started looking at this client yet. If they do nothing, RMDs are not only going to subject them to IRMA, it's going to subject them to the AMT. And they had never thought of that. But our forward-looking projection goes out that far. And even with the expiration, Georgette, of the tax cuts in 2026 and the ability for this couple to start itemizing again rather than taking the standard $24,000 deduction, they were still going to be hit with the AMT. And when they saw that they were going to be hit with the AMT, they're saying, my God, what do we have to do to get rid of that? It was purely being driven by RMDs. But we could show them this with a tax projection report. So I kind of wanted to throw that tax part out there, that it's not just a matter of looking every year, Georgette. You have to really do a baseline projection of what you might do without any proactive planning, And then you can stop building in the proactive planning, because when you pay taxes on a conversion, Georgette, it's not only what is it going to cost the younger you. Remember I said I'm a negotiator. I'm an arbitrator between the younger and older you. Someone's got to pay the taxes. If I can show the older you that, hey, if Georgette does nothing and continues to defer, she's going to hand you a tax bill. Here's the income taxes you're going to pay. Here are the Medicare surcharges you're going to pay because of IRMA, income-related monthly adjusted amount, or the means testing that was passed in 2016 on Medicare premiums. And here is the AMT you're going to be subject to if they don't change the AMT rules. You have to compare that, Georgette, against what is it going to cost you and George in income taxes today to do a conversion.
Right.
And when people start looking at that, they're like, oh my God, I never factored in the AMT. I never factored in the Medicare surcharges. I never factored in the widower tax penalty on a $4.5 million IRA inherited by a couple who are now a single person because one died. And that tax calculation has to go into any decision on if you convert. Now, I went down a wicked rabbit hole, Vic, from bucketing to tax planning, so I apologize, Georgette. But I'm just trying to give you some ideas to look at on the tax side. On spending, remember on our bucketing strategy, Georgette, we don't feel you should go 1, 2, and 3 in chronological order. I have no problem in a good year, because your bucket 3, in my opinion, should be predominantly equities. Because if you have a good bucket 1 and a good bucket 2, and we consider it visualized asset allocation, here's your cash, here's your fixed income, here is your investments, and bucket 4, there is your lifetime secure income, which to me is a bond on steroids. But it's even better because it never runs out and it's backed by a third party. So if your bucket 3, which could be 70, 80% equities, if not more, if it's all growing because it's a really good year, harvest it, Georgette. Harvest it. I love to God, and people who listen to me know that's why I'm thinking of moving to Kentucky, even though Chris shakes his head every time I say that. I want to move because I want a garden. Well, right now, my garden's at full bloom, Chris. I got apples right now and kale and tomatoes. Well, I'm not harvesting my tomatoes fast enough, and I'm losing them. They're rotting on the vine. The same can happen with a capital gain, Chris. If you don't take it, if you don't harvest it when it's there, what can happen to it?
It can wither and die.
It can rot on the vine. Wall Street can take it away. Now, the question is, Georgette, which bucket 3 do you take from? You're always taxable or you're maybe taxable. You don't have enough and never taxable, so don't touch it. Well, that's going to depend on an annual evaluation of your current tax situation, the estimated spending you're going to do, the interest and dividends you're going to receive on your very large non-qualified holdings. What is all this going to do? And it's going to take an annual calculation to determine that. But don't lock yourself into a strict rigidness to bucketing. It is fluid. It changes. It is influenced by taxes, by the market, by the type of gains you get in the individual holdings. And you just have to kind of manipulate it. Does that help explain it a little?
I get the fluid part of it. I'm still a little confused about how the bucketing strategy would look if we look at two different approaches, a bucket strategy under taxable and a bucket strategy under maybe taxable.
Mm-hmm.
So if we say we have $2.2 million in taxable, how would that bucket strategy work? I mean, how do you bucket for stuff that's all in mutual funds at this point?
Well, with you're talking about $2.2 million in your always taxable.
Okay. Yeah, what he essentially was saying is when you have these buckets, there's one half of the question is, what dollar amount do I want in these buckets? And then generally the type of holding you want in those buckets, cash, buffer type, you know, cash-like with some gain, but principal protection in the buffer assets, and then investment bucket itself. But then additionally, the next layer question there is, what mix between always taxable and maybe taxable do you want in each of those? And for flexibility, and so this year-to-year tax strategy can kind of take place, you're going to want to have both in each of those buckets, essentially, other than cash. You know, the cash, I don't know that we
they should have a little bit of cash
in the always taxable, but
they should have always a little bit of cash in both. You should have all three buckets, Georgette, in all two major accounts you have, always taxable and maybe taxable. What breakdown? It is hard for me to tell you without – I didn't crunch your numbers. I don't have an idea of what your spending is going to be, of what your tax situation is going to be. So that's why I'm saying you need to look at these things. But bucketing isn't, oh, my bucket two assets are in my IRA. My bucket one assets are in my non-IRA. It's not like that at all. The spending from your account types – remember, the account types indicate the tax treatment of a withdrawal. You are spending money. You're withdrawing. You're distributing. So get out of the mindset of an accumulation portfolio and welcome to the mindset of a distribution portfolio. You are going to distribute assets in any given year, Georgette, based on that year's tax situation. The tax tail is wagging the dog. I said that one right. Because you don't want, yeah, I nailed that one. And what you want to do is, yes, pay attention to taxes, both over the long term, so we can make sure converting makes sense. And based on what you've shared with me, I think it would make sense. Because if you don't do anything, I think the AMT, IRMA, and the widow-widower tax penalty are going to nail you and George. So because we know we're going to be doing some converting, and remember, when you convert assets. You don't have to convert cash. So you can convert actual shares of bucket three. You can convert actual shares of bucket two and actual shares of bucket one. I would not convert right now bucket one and two. There's no need to. When you convert, because your conversions are still going to represent such a small portion of your overall tax diversification, because you only have $160,000 in never taxable Roth accounts, you're going to convert your equities first, and I would convert the most aggressive ones that have fallen the most in value if the market corrects, so they will rebound 100% tax-free in the Roth. But get into the notion. I can't tell you you should have $200,000 in bucket two inside this and $100,000 in bucket one inside that. Each of your two major accounts, always taxable and maybe taxable, should have a representative share of bucket one, bucket two, and bucket three. Now, how much in each bucket? We wrote an Excel spreadsheet. We kind of work with clients who are in our retirement planning process to show them how much money we think they're going to need every year in spending. And we believe that 2 years worth of money should be in cash. Some clients put in more, some clients put in less. It's totally up to you. But having that money in cash is going to allow you to spend quickly, easily, and most tax efficiently without falling victim at all, Chris, to sequential risk.
Right. It's a big enough buffer that you can control when you harvest from assets, not being forced to have them distributed because you need them to live on. That's the key, having that buffer in there so that you can control your situation more. It's about giving you control and flexibility that adds value to the whole plan.
We always, when we bucket, especially with clients who have meaningful assets such as yourself, we get them to understand each account type. Always taxable, maybe taxable, never taxable. You only have three account types. Each account type should have bucket one, two, and three assets in them. Now, I'm not counting the Roth because it's such a minor portion of your portfolio. And oftentimes, we still like people, unless they're trying to qualify for the ACA, to defer that Roth as long as possible. So we oftentimes will overweight the Roth with bucket three investments. Bucket three, folks, are your investment pool. And for us, most of our investment pool for our clients are in equities, pure equities. Everybody, you have to understand, if she has a bucket one and a bucket two account, bucket three should be a lot of equities, because we're isolating it. Why are we isolating it? So she can cherry pick. If they're up, I'm going to harvest gain. If they're down, I don't want to sell more shares than I had to when the portfolio was up. I'm going to go to bucket one or to bucket two to get some of that money. And even if, and it doesn't apply to you, Georgette, I don't think, with your assets, but it could. Some people, Chris, have to consume principal. We know this going into the bucketing. So we have to look at bucket three and then set a rule. When do you spend into principal? What do we consider a down market? For someone not spending from principal, Chris, we will not spend from bucket three if their portfolio has dropped below the opening value. If they're saying, I don't want to spend any of my assets, well, if they put $1 million in and it's now worth $950,000, we're not spending from that bucket. They broke that rule. If they're selectively spending down their pool, we know every year we have to spend a certain amount of principal. So what we look at in that particular case, Georgette, if someone is going to safely, or I hate to use that word safe because nothing in life is safe when you're spending, but if you're going to wisely spend your assets down, you will not spend if it breaches the previous year's close minus the scheduled principal you're going to spend from that account. So you're just kind of watching how you're spending from that account. Hopefully you can visualize what I'm trying to explain, Georgette. But please get into the idea, and maybe we didn't specify this on previous shows because we make bucketing sound easy. It is easy. But there is a little bit of manual work involved, or mental work involved, because you have to position each account type, maybe never and always taxable. And again, in your case, always taxable is not going to have all two buckets or all three buckets. But the other accounts should. And which ones you spend from is going to depend on that year's taxes. How much to put in one and two is going to depend on how much risk capacity you want to create. Risk capacity, and Chris is nodding his head, is everything in bucketing. Risk capacity is what's going to make you sleep at night, George and Georgette, and going to make you feel comfortable spending money, which is key. You don't want to give up doing something you love doing because your portfolio is down. So the more money you have in one and two, and you indicated to me in my notes that in your particular bucketing, you're going to have 2 years in bucket one, 3 to 6 years in bucket two. So I'm going to take 6 years, the long part of bucket two, add it to the 2 years in bucket one. You're going to have 8 years of risk capacity. We recommend 8 to 12, so you're at the very low end. But you do have 8 years of protection, because you're going to position in bucket one and two, Georgette, 8 years worth of spending. The first 8 years of retirement is positioned in bucket one and two. I would almost put 50-50 between always taxable and maybe taxable, because those are the two main accounts you're going to be generating from. And that means the rest can be in investments. But in your particular case, it doesn't mean all that extra money should be in 80, 90, 100% equities because you have 8 years of risk capacity. Remember, if you have to spend 1, 2, or 3 years of risk capacity, that changes the scenario a lot, doesn't it, Chris? Because they have less and less and less risk capacity. So you're going to always have to look at your bucket three and make sure the asset allocation is positioned wisely for your risk capacity, Georgette. How many years of protection do you have? That's why we say 8 to 12 with a target of 10. But every few years, we look at this for clients and may have to move money around. We may have to add more from bucket three to bucket one and two, or or we feel comfortable enough to take some from bucket one and two, because spending changes as you go through retirement, mm-hmm. and we can add it to bucket three and to more investments. Does that start to lay a little bit of a groundwork? I can't give you specific dollar amounts, Georgette. I didn't crunch your numbers. I'm just trying to teach you the concepts of how you need to position this.
It does help. I still have a question about buckets within the always taxable category.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be our retirement account, the IRA, the 401k, the 403b.
Yes.
So how would you fund bucket one and bucket two with what is now mutual funds and stocks? Do I make sure that the mutual funds that I'm in have a high percentage of cash?
Gotcha. Nope. Now I see where you're going with that. Inside your 401k, possibly the 403b, which is $500,000, most likely is going to be a stable value fund. Stable value funds right now will probably yield around 1.8 to 3%. I've seen them all over the place. A stable value fund, it's kind of an insurance product and a bank product rolled into one. I won't bore you with it. There's counterparty management and risk, and they are managed specifically, as the name implies, to maintain a stable value but yield more. They yield on par with probably a short-term to intermediate-term bond fund without the volatility. So a stable value holding could be perfect. You may overweight. It doesn't mean just because you have an IRA, a 401k, and a 403b, there's got to be a little bit of 1, 2, and 3 in all of them. Remember, we look at account type from a tax standpoint. Those three accounts, your IRA, your 401k, and your 403b, are always taxable. If it turns out you need, I'm just going to use a nice round number because it works perfect in my example. If it turns out you guys need $500,000 between bucket one and bucket two, a stable value fund could solve both of that. Stable value could be a one and two. So you earmark maybe one of the accounts, the 401k, I'm just hypothetically saying that, has a higher yielding stable value than the 403b. There is your bucket one and some of your bucket two in one account, the 401k. Now, whenever you're doing that, though, you have to make sure the 401k and the 403b, which are employer plans and do not have the flexibility of an IRA, are going to allow you multiple annual withdrawals, penalty-free withdrawals. I won't name the company, but I was just helping someone recently. I'll tell you the name of the company after, Chris. An oil company, big oil company. $40 per withdrawal from their 401k.
As a fee.
Even if it was an RMD. They wanted you the hell out of the 401k.
Right.
So I don't know who your 401k providers are, but I would get on the phone with them. Find out what flexibility you have. Can you make a withdrawal request at any time? If they limit you to one a month or one a quarter, I think that's still pretty flexible. But if they're going to charge you a fee or limit you to one a year, it may not work as a bucket one, and we may have to look elsewhere. But don't think that each of these three accounts need to have a little of each. We look at account type. Doesn't matter to me what account. If we need to take out $30,000 this year from a tax standpoint, from an always taxable account, I don't care if it comes from the IRA, the 401k, or the 403b. It's all going to be taxed the same. Spending,
okay.
We look at taxes. Spending, we look at taxes. Account types can have a lot of overlap, Chris. Hopefully I explained that well. Mm-hmm. Is there anything you want to add?
No, I think that trying to categorize them as more of those two main groups rather than individually thinking of it as an IRA, 401k, 403b, any of those types of accounts, just thinking of it as one type of account, the always taxable account. And then you can kind of move those pieces around, those chess pieces around where it's most appropriate, most efficient, what you can, you know, if there's an account that you can't access very much, you're not going to want that to count for something where you would need regular access to it. So those are the types of decisions once you figure out the specifics of the accounts. And then that also, some of these things, if you find out something you don't like the fees or restrictions on distributions and things like that, might be a justifiable reason to roll that out into your IRA instead of leaving it at 401k.
Yeah, I was going to make the recommendation at the very least, and I certainly have not done an analysis, but it may make sense to move the 401k and the 403b into the IRA if for any reason it's going to make your RMDs a hell of a lot easier in 10 years.
Yeah.
Because IRAs, 401ks, and 403bs cannot be aggregated for RMD purposes. You're going to have to take one from each account. So you're going to be faced with three RMDs.
Separate calculations.
Separate calculations, separate checks, separate everything. If you moved it all into an IRA, it's only one RMD. One big one. RMD amount's going to be the same. It's just you're going to have to take three instead of one. It's a lot easier. Remember, I often say to people, I may be talking to the 59 and 60-year-old George and Georgette. I'm advocating for the 89 and 90-year-old George and Georgette who will not understand RMDs or the calculation or how it's done. And you're going to be giving the older you three instead of just one.
Okay, so high level, if I say we're going to need $600,000 or let's say $700,000 to cover 8 years of risk capacity, I would take that $700,000 and put $350,000 in the buckets under always taxable and $350,000 in the buckets for maybe taxable.
I would say high level, that seems very, very reasonable. Absolutely.
That's with the 50-50 split. So as long as I would have like stable value of $350,000 in the always taxable category, it doesn't matter which account it's in, just in that category. And then in the maybe taxable, have another $350,000 and that would cover us safely. If we needed to take money out in a downtime in the market, we could take it either from the maybe taxable or from the always taxable stable value fund.
Absolutely, because spending will be looked at annually. Absolutely. And spending is all about what account does the money come from. And that we have to look at annually. When we do it with our clients, we look at it annually, whether it's every January or every quarter. Conversions, we now, beginning this year, have to look every December. December is going to be a very busy time for us because we cannot undo Roth conversions anymore, Chris. So the reason we want to wait to December is I have 11 out of the 12 months worth of income already determined. And then we can guess what you're going to receive. You're going to get big unknowns, and that's going to be the distributions from your maybe taxable holdings. Mutual funds do most of their distributions in December. So we have to guess what that distribution is going to be. What's it going to do to your tax bracket? And then to wrap up the rest of the year and get the conversion done, I need all that information, or you would need all that information. So retirement isn't easy, as you can see. And do-it-yourselfers, we're all for you guys. That's why we do the podcast and teach. But it's going to require some work unless you outsource some of the task to other people.
But the income from the category of maybe taxable, that would be capital gains and dividends, correct?
Yeah, well, we generally recommend, if you listen to our bucketing strategy in the past, because on these maybe taxable accounts, it doesn't matter if you reinvest the money or not, you're still going to pay taxes on it. And it's all about consuming. So back to my tomato analogy, if I was to harvest a tomato the minute it turned red and took it and not leave it on the vine, I'm going to be able to eat that tomato. Well, it's the same thing with the interest and dividends. We personally feel once you retire, interest and dividends from your maybe taxable account, not from your never taxable, excuse me, your always taxable accounts, but your maybe taxable accounts, and you've got a lot of money in there, almost $1.5 million. Interest and dividends should never be reinvested. It should feed right into your bucket one accounts. So wherever your cash holdings are, feed that right in there. Don't do it from the IRA. You don't want to force distributions out all the time, but inside the IRA, you don't have to reinvest suggest. You can put that money into the stable value if it's inside the 401k, but inside your IRA, all IRA providers are going to have a money market option or some place where you can build some cash. There's nothing wrong with that. If your bucket one rises because you guys get a lot of distributions, then you have extra cash to reinvest next time the market's down. There's nothing wrong with keeping some powder dry and having some cash to invest when the market's down. But inside your maybe taxable accounts, there's no need to reinvest. You're going to be spending it. You're going to be taxed the same on it. The one thing we do reinvest is the capital gain. Because remember, the capital gain is optional. You're not taxed on it. Well, you are taxed in the year you get the capital gain distribution. But we usually will reinvest the capital gain if the client is looking to grow that account, not just maintain it. They want to kind of grow it. If you're looking to maintain it, you can harvest out some of the cap gain too if you'd like.
Right.
Because on the maybe taxable accounts, whether you reinvest it or not, you're going to be nailed with it. Inside the IRA, we usually always reinvest capital gain, but we'll take the interest and dividends. We'll take the interest and dividends and pay them into a cash account inside the IRA. We're talking bucket three part of your IRA now. So this is your investment pool. Investments are going to give off dividends, interest, and capital gains. We usually take the dividends and interest, keep it inside the IRA, but pay it off into a money market style account or something like that. The capital gains, because you're not paying taxes on the capital gains, we usually reinvest the capital gains inside the IRA, inside the always taxable account, to get that balance to continue to grow. But we take the interest and dividends out. Sometimes clients don't need that. And they say, hey, Jim, rather than building my cash account, I don't need this. I'm just going to reinvest it. Absolutely. One thing Chris will agree on, there's no hard and fast rule, Chris. It's flexible. The bucketing is designed for each person's situation.
And the nice thing is, no matter what plan you put in place, even if you kind of pencil out, you spend all the time to put together a 10, 15, 20-year plan, it can change along the way to react.
It will change along the way. It will.
People have locked in their mind, oh, this is my path. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to do this in year five, this in year eight, this, you know. No, you react to the reality of what unfolds over that time period.
Yes.
But as long as you've got kind of a...
And there's probably an inheritance in there too somewhere. But.
Right. You've got a blueprint for a general idea, then it makes it a manageable thing to adjust to, not a, oh my gosh, what do I do this year? And then, oh my gosh, what do I do next year? It helps you structure that decision-making as you move forward.
Now, one thing I would recommend you do, Georgette, as you figure this out, just to give you an idea how we help clients bucket when they hire us, we have an Excel spreadsheet that we created. So we know if we've did a retirement plan, we know the general overall rate of return assumption being used on all the client's assets. Right now, we have a forward-looking projection of 4.65% for a moderate portfolio. So let's just use that as a baseline as I describe this. So what we do, if we know the entire portfolio has to earn about 4.65%, now, people might say that's a little low, that's a little high. I don't want to argue return projections. Let's just look at this 4.65. If the plan shows success at this 4.65, and now we're trying to bucket around that, Georgette, obviously, any money that you move to bucket one and bucket two in these interest rate environments are not going to earn 4.65%.
Nope. Exactly.
So if you had $600,000 out of your near almost $3 million net worth inside a lower yielding account, what we then do is we look at how much would your bucket three, how much would your investments need to earn? Because now let's just say you had $3 million in assets and you put $600,000 in bucket one and two. That means you now have $240,000. What would that $240,000 need to earn? So bucket one, which really doesn't yield much at all, it's cash. Bucket two probably will pay around 2.5% to 3%. What would the rest of your assets need to earn so all three are averaging 4.65%? So our spreadsheet actually moves. So the more money we put in cash, that's less money in bucket three because we're putting it in cash. Or the more money we put in bucket two, that's less money in bucket three. Our analysis actually moves and will show you what bucket three needs to be earning. And then it's tied to our risk-based portfolio. So it'll say, well, this now needs to earn, instead of 4.65, you actually have to earn 5.35. I'm just making these numbers up. And 5.35 pushes you in our projection to a moderate or moderately aggressive portfolio. So we can then ask clients, do you have the risk tolerance to handle this investment? It's one thing for Chris and I to say we look at risk capacity, and that's really what Chris and I look at is risk capacity. We're going to make sure that if the market drops, the whole idea of bucketing, Georgette, and listeners who are still listening to this off of iTunes, because this is going long, but you know me when I get going. What we try to get people to understand is even though we have created the risk capacity for you to spend, hopefully you're going to feel comfortable and keep spending in good times or bad early in retirement. That's what we are going to want you to do. We still have to make sure, Georgette, the portfolio, the bucket three, the actual investments are going to match your risk tolerance.
Which a lot of people, once they realize what we've done with the risk capacity generation of buckets one and two, get a little more comfortable with more volatility and risk in that bucket three than they could handle if it was all in bucket three.
On paper, yep. That works brilliant.
We try, and not that we're trying to talk people into anything, but when you look at the overall thing, you just have to realize that if things are a little more choppy, a little more roller coaster ride in that three, you've still got your other two buckets that you've built. So it hypothetically will make you feel more comfortable, but some people just can't deal with that.
They can't handle it.
And so we have to take a different approach. Yep. Different approach. Some people just can't sleep at night like that. So.
And never forget the idea, and you're in a situation where your spending needs are going to be far greater for the first 10, 11 years because you're delaying Social Security. So the amount of debiting from your portfolio is going to be greater at first. That is very typical. Don't worry about that. We see it all the time. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, you are retiring at a beautiful time to be positioning bucketing, Georgette. The market's so high. I mean, Trump sends out a tweet, the market goes up another 500 points. And compliance, I'm joking on that. But what we're saying is the markets aren't correcting. They're still hitting all-time highs. Now is the time to be positioning your buckets. You don't want to retire in an 08, 09 situation.
Try to bucket there.
And then try to bucket when your portfolio is down 30%.
Precious little to fill buckets at that point.
Exactly. So now is the time to be doing this, Georgette. Now is the time to be positioning. Because I will tell you, you will freak out the first bear market as a retiree. And the second, third, fourth, and fifth bear market as a retiree. It is totally different when you realize this is it. There's no more. I am not exchanging my labor for money that I can take and invest. A down market is no longer a buying opportunity. It's going to freak you out. You will stop looking, Georgette, at your portfolio in percentage terms, saying, wow, I'm up 10% or down 10%. And instead, you're going to say, wow, I made another $200,000 this year that I can spend. Or, wow, I lost $200,000 that I'm never going to be able to spend. You're going to look at dollars. You're not going to be looking at percents. We see it all the time. Bucketing is to help you overcome this behavioral impasse where you spent your entire life trying to accumulate a portfolio, and now all of a sudden you have to consume it and eat it. It would be the moral equivalent of me growing a tomato plant and then refusing to eat the tomatoes because they look so beautiful, Chris. And you're thinking, well, what's the point? What the hell did you grow the damn tomato for? Well, don't touch them. They're beautiful. Well,
and if I eat them, they won't be there anymore.
And if I eat them, they won't be there anymore. Well, you're going to have that with your portfolio, Georgette. You're going to be, oh my God, this is all our assets. Hey, look, honey, isn't this beautiful? Don't touch it. I grew that over the last 30 years. You're not just going to look at it. You're going to want to spend it. But when that portfolio is dropping and you know there's no more coming in, I don't mind going out and eating my tomatoes. I don't mind going out and throwing the ones that fell down away. Because I know even if my tomatoes run out, there's an inexhaustible supply at the Whole Foods down the market. So I know that's my bucket four. Right. See where I'm going with this, Georgette? Bucket four is the lifetime guaranteed income that even if you did spend all these assets and you and your hubby would have to go out and be buying a Bentley every other year to do that. But just assuming you did run out, and for those listeners who may not have the level of Georgette and George's assets, the brilliance of what we try to preach to clients is if your money did run out by your 80s, number one, you had fun. And that's what life is all about when you retire. You didn't put off your trips to whatever you want to do or the passions that you wanted to pursue. You did them. You spent it. You had fun. Oh, the money ran out. But you have this inexhaustible money we call bucket four. Pension, Social Security, and income annuities that will take care of your minimum dignity floor for the rest of your life. And that, to me, is the important key with getting you to feel comfortable spending your money.
Well, I think with the bucketing strategy in place, I'm going to be very comfortable spending, and I'm not going to panic with the market being down. So that's great. Why I'm trying to set this up, and I really appreciate your insight on this.
And not that we want to let Jim go off on this topic, but I will drop one little extra thing for you to think about. You're also at a prime age and asset accumulation situation with children that there's some specific strategies to guarantee for them some amount of inheritance that will then give you, I guess, emotional permission to spend the rest of the money on yourselves,
spend even more,
knowing that they are taken care of. Totally beyond the conversation. We go another hour on that. But
well,
if you're curious about that, from an age standpoint and your asset accumulated to this point, there's some people that would like to do the strategy I'm referring to, but can't just because they're too old, they can't qualify, etc. I think you should definitely consider it.
Yeah, she can hit it.
Is that life insurance?
It would be a summation of life insurance. Could work if the internal rate of return of the policies work. And, you know, Chris, he's going to go on and on about this, so I have to be real careful. But you would probably look at a second-to-die policy, not individual policies. A second-to-die GUL, which is real, relatively speaking, real in a low cost, real efficiently priced, and it could guarantee a sizable inheritance. And then you marry that to a charitable strategy on your IRAs, not on your Roths, not on the maybe taxable, because Roths will be inherited tax-free, maybe taxable will get a step-up in basis. But then you marry a second-to-die GUL on top of a charitable remainder uni trust, CRUT, CRUT is what we call it. And that strategy would allow all the IRA assets to go into this trust you created tax-free. They can be sold and rebalanced tax-free. They can be doled out to your children at about 5% a year. So this removes the risk that I firmly believe the stretch IRA is going to go the way of the dodo bird over the course of your retirement. And they're going to start forcing non-spouse beneficiaries back to the old rules, which was distributing an inherited IRA in 5 years. So if you leave a $3, $4, $5 million IRA to your children and the government is forcing it to be closed in 5 years, you're talking $700,000, $800,000, $900,000 or $1 million a year.
A lot of your money
to the government. But through a CRT, it goes into the CRT tax-free. The CRT doles it out. It will be taxed to the children as the income is received by the CRT, so we can manipulate how the CRT is invested. And at the end of the CRT terms, only 10% of the net present value of the initial money that went in goes to charity. You can leave more, but they set the limit. So up to 90% or so can go to the children in a very tax-efficient, slowly doled out manner. That's what Chris is getting to. But if you let him talk, he'd go on and on and on.
I'm surprised Jim stopped there, actually.
Oh, I could go on.
Yeah,
this.
I know. I didn't want to light that fuse. But certainly something to look into. And when you're looking into all these different factors, we've only touched on, you know, we spent an hour and 19 minutes now on this, and only touched on a portion of all the things that you need to be looking
God,
at.
Oh, my God. Retirement planning isn't easy, Georgette. It's. I'm glad you're doing it. Don't ever hesitate to reach out to people. And this isn't a shame, lame way to say, hey, hire us. But we're available, as well as other people, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But as a do-it-yourselfer, don't be afraid to reach out to people, especially those who have the knowledge and software to show you all these concepts, from the tax projection to see if, like, future AMT and IRM are going to affect you. We didn't even get into what you're going to do for health insurance. I'm looking that you have a 403B and a pension, so you may be a retired teacher or your husband is, so you may have health care. But if not, and you have to qualify for the ACA, there's going to be no conversion opportunity for the first 5 years right. of retirement, because we're going to be trying to qualify for as many ACA credits as we can. So there's just a lot of moving parts here that need to be tied up together. And it doesn't hurt to have a firm that's going to do a lot of this heavy lifting, so you and your husband can be out doing what you want to do, which is retire and not worry about, well, what's taxes going to be? What's the market doing? What is this doing? What is that doing? It just is kind of done for you automatically. So don't hesitate for that. This isn't, I don't think you're going to need asset management. Be very wary on advisors who want to charge you 1.25, 1.5 to manage a $2-3 million portfolio.
You're definitely a target.
Yeah, your work is not worth $20,000-$30,000 a year to you. It's going to be to them, because they just want to shovel money from you into them. Be very wary on that. But you might want to try to hire firms that are just going to charge you to help you do a lot of these tax projections and management, where you're just going to pay them a fee. You're just going to pay them a simple fee, not based on your assets, but based on your yearly complexity. So 1 year you might pay them hardly nothing. Next year you might have to pay them more because something is going on. That's what I would look for.
Yep.
Well, if I reach out to anybody, it's going to be you guys.
Oh, well. Thank
you. We appreciate that. So, any last little thoughts or questions? Or don't give Jim another big topic, because we are running out of recording space.
Okay. I have one simple question, and maybe I should just Google this. But on the maybe taxable arena, if we decide to take and spend the capital gains, dividends, and interest, is that income tax? That doesn't change our income tax bracket, right? That's just taxes capital gains, correct?
Well, you said simple. We did show with Junior on cap gains taxes, didn't we, before he left?
We did.
And he covers that, doesn't he?
A couple months ago.
Yeah. Listen to the show on cap gains, because it doesn't quite work that way. Even though some people say, oh, your capital gains is zero if you're in the 15 bracket, or they're 15% if you're in this bracket, or 20% if you're in that bracket. If you actually know how capital gains are structured, the cap gain might be 0, 15, or 20, but it's filling up space on income that would have been taxed at much lower brackets that's now being taxed at much higher brackets. How's that for a good brief summation? That's
the best brief summary you've probably given in 2 years.
Or at least in the last hour, 19 minutes. But I was not on the show, but Justin, we affectionately call him Junior, who left the firm to go be a financial analyst at a local utility, he and you did a show specifically
yes.
on that, right?
It was earlier this summer, this past summer.
So go to our website. Do you go to iTunes to get our shows, or do you go to the Retirement and IRA Show's actual website?
To the podcast.
Okay, go to our website, and at least to figure out what podcast it is. If you go to Jim Helps, Jim, J-I-M-H-E-L-P-S, jimhelps.com, that's my business website. On the business website, towards the bottom, is a link to the podcast's actual website.
Yep.
Click,
okay.
Click that and go to it. And then in the search bar, she would probably type capital gains. Mm-hmm. If you type capital gains, it'll pop up with that podcast, and then you can see which one it is, and then just go to iTunes and download that one.
And I think she can access it from the website, too.
Oh, yeah, and you can listen right there from the website if you are streaming
it. It's definitely been this year.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's in the last several months.
Yeah, and I wasn't here, so...
So it's a lot shorter show than it normally is.
Okay.
Fine, throw me under the bus.
We are going to be out in Denver at the beginning of October.
Oh, it's a beautiful time of the year.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. If you're in the area and you want to get together, we're north of Denver, but I actually live south of here, so maybe we can meet somewhere in the middle, depending on where in Denver you are. We'll grab a coffee and actually put a face to our words.
That'd be very nice. I'll talk with your admin about that.
Yeah, talk to Laura about that, and she can set something up.
That would be great. I want to thank you both very much for your time today. It helped a lot.
Great.
Good.
Thanks,
I'm happy, Georgette.
Have a nice...
Thank you so much.
Stay dry there until the rain passes.
Yeah, could be a few days.
Yeah, sounds like it. Okay, mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks for the call.
Bye, thank you very much.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, well, that wraps up the Q&A show. Very long one, but hopefully people found it interesting. I know we covered a lot of topics. That could be like four different shows.
Almost.
Almost, yeah.
So we're into it for $1.25.
I could keep talking.
I know.
All right, folks. But anyways, this is the Retirement and IRA Show Q&A. I do apologize to all the emailed Qs. You will get an A sooner or later, but we do take live callers. They jump to the head. So if anybody has emailed a question and we haven't answered it quick enough, feel free to contact the show. Chris, we record, every afternoon? Every Monday afternoon around 2:30, 3 o'clock Mountain Time. So if you go to jimhelps.com, you will see when we are broadcasting. Or if they download what app, Chris? Mixlr?
Yeah, M-I-X-L-R.
M-I-X-L-R.
App you're going to look for, yeah.
So I said Mixlr.
Mm-hmm. Well, some people might spell it L-E-R, Mixlr.
Oh, no, it's Mixlr.
Mixlr.
But anyways, you can download this MIXLR app and put in Retirement and IRA Show, and it'll actually message you when we're broadcasting. Is that correct?
It does.
Okay. Yeah. Perfect. So
thanks for everybody sticking with us through this one. If you have any questions related to this show or anything else, please reach out. We'll be back with you next week with a brand new podcast.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.